You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Mr. Court, sound test and audible statement of the voice, judge presiding.
Thank you. The jurors, I believe, are ready to be brought in and lined up, so we'll remain standing and we can have the jurors brought in.
All right, please. Excuse our President Counterfeiter.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right. Good morning, everyone. We're on the record on case CR 22-21-1623, State of Idaho versus Chad Guy Daybell. We're continuing with evidence today. The state with its case in chief. I'll note the jurors are all present, properly seated, and all have signed their juror affirmation. So the court again extends its appreciation for following the court's instruction each day. We will continue with evidence this morning. Apologies for getting started a little bit late. We took up an evidentiary matter outside the presence of the jury and made a ruling on that. So the court will note the defendant is here present with counsel. The state's here present, also the prosecutors. And at this time, we concluded with a witness yesterday at the end of the day. So I believe the state intends to call another witness this morning. Who will be examining the witness?
I will be, Your Honor. And based upon your ruling just a moment ago, we changed our witness order. He's coming up, and he might just be a minute getting to the courtroom.
Okay, we'll go ahead and wait for the witness to appear. Who will the witness be that's going to be on direct?
Yeah, the state will call Steve Schultz.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wixom.
You solemnly swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Thank you. All right, I'm going to just inquire of the witness, Mr. Schultz, now that you've been placed under oath, there is a order in this case prohibiting witnesses from viewing trial testimony before they testify. I'll note that the trial is being live streamed and also open for public attendance. Mr. Schultz, have you observed or viewed any of the trial testimony in the case?
I've not viewed anything.
Okay. And have you discussed with anyone else the testimony they've given in the case?
No.
Okay. Thank you for that affirmation. Mr. Wixom, you can begin your direct.
Thank you, Your Honor. Excuse me. Good morning, Mr. Schultz.
Good morning.
Could you please state and spell your full name for the record?
It's Stephen R. Schultz. Stephen, S-T-E-V-E-N-R-S-C-H-U-L-T-Z.
Thank you. And where do you live?
Springville, Utah.
And are you currently retired?
Yes, I am.
When did you retire?
I retired in 2022. Correct, yeah.
And prior to retiring, what is it that you did for a living?
I worked for 25 years with the state of Utah in the Child Support Enforcement Division. And for the last, from 2010 through 2010 to 2022, I worked for two separate mortuaries in Springville.
And what did you do for the mortuaries?
I was a funeral director, also an embalmer. And
did you do that for the entire approximate 12 years?
Yes.
And I want to ask, do you know Chad Daybell?
I do.
How do you know him?
Chad and I were neighbors from when we moved into the ward or into the neighborhood. That was in 2006. I'd purchased my parents' home who passed away, and Chad lived two doors down and down from me.
And when you said neighborhood, is that in Springville?
Yes, in Springville.
So approximately how many years did you live as neighbors with Mr. Daybell?
Until they left for Idaho, I believe it was 2015, at the end of the school year.
Approximately 9 years?
Yeah.
And what about the rest of his family? Did you know his wife, Tammy?
I did, yes.
And what about his children?
Yes.
How well would you say that you knew the family?
Very well. We were neighbors. We attended the same church together. We had many conversations and worked together, and both in the funeral industry, as well as just basic good neighbors.
Would you consider yourself friends?
Yes.
You just mentioned that you worked together in the industry. What work did Chad do that you're referring to?
Chad worked for I believe it was both Springville and Spanish Fork cemeteries. He was the sexton. And
could you just briefly explain what did he do as a sexton? What was his role?
As a sexton, he would take care of the cemetery. He would basically assist us in the funerals when we arrived for a graveside service. He would open and close the graves. And so there was a lot of free time that we had to talk and a lot of share stories and stuff while the funeral burial was going on.
Thank you. And I want to draw your attention back to October 19th of 2019. Did you learn of the passing of Tammy Daybell?
I did.
How did you learn that?
The first I'd heard is that Jason Gwilliam, a neighbor, contacted me and said that Tammy had passed away. And that's the first I'd heard of it. That was on a Saturday.
Did you later hear from Chad Daybell that day?
I did, yes, a few hours later. He called me and wanted to know if I would be willing to bring Tammy back home to Springville and take care of the services down here. And I'd say I'd be honored to.
Why did you feel that way?
Because this is a good family. The Daybells were a solid rock in our community. They in our exact neighborhood, there were five members of the same family in that vicinity. And I thought highly of all of them.
You mentioned the name Jason a moment ago.
Yes.
Were you aware, was Chad acquainted with Jason?
I would hope so. He was his brother-in-law.
And why did you contact Jason to come with you?
A lot of times people would like to assist in the funeral services other than just being a silent participant. When there's an opportunity, I like to get the family members involved. And plus, it was a long drive from Springville to Rexburg and back in the same day. And I would really appreciate someone who could also help me drive and do that for that whole thing. So I asked Jason. He says he would love to do that.
So did you, in fact, go to Rexburg?
Yes, we did.
What day did you do that?
We did that the following day, Sunday morning, is when we left.
About what time did you arrive in Rexburg?
It was, I want to say 9 or 10, somewhere around that, because we had to, it's a four and a half, 5 hour drive. And so we arrived about that time.
Where did you first go when you came to Idaho?
We went directly to the house.
Whose house?
To Chad's house, Chad and Tammy's house.
And when you arrived there, who was at the home?
There was obviously, of course, Chad and his oldest son, Garth, and Chad's parents.
Okay. Did you talk to Chad?
I did, yeah.
Can you explain to the jury what that conversation was, please?
Basically, I went up to approach him, gave him a hug and said, I am so sorry for your loss. This was a devastating blow to him, I'm sure. And as it was for me to know that someone as young as Tammy had passed away.
Did you have a conversation with him about how Tammy had passed?
I did.
What was that conversation?
I just asked him, I says, what had happened? And he said that she had been experiencing some difficulty with breathing and she went to bed that night. And then when he woke up at some time during the evening or the morning, I'm not sure when, because I wasn't there, that she passed away. I believe he found her on the floor. And then he called Garth in to help lift his mom back into the bed. And that's what he told me.
Did he say anything to you about conversations that he had had with the coroner?
He did. I asked him attending physician was, and he said, well, we had the county coroner come, and the county coroner had already been there and left before we arrived. And he said the county coroner said that it appears that she may have died from an embolism. And then she left after that. I did ask Chad if they were going to do an autopsy, which is usually a case when there's not an attending physician there, but in this case, the county coroner was the person in charge at that point and made the decisions as to that she could go ahead and be embalmed.
Did Chad express to you whether or not he wanted an autopsy?
He did not want an autopsy.
Did he say that in so many words, or how did he express that?
That's pretty much it. Yeah, he says, I asked him, he says, are they going to do an autopsy to find out? Because, you know, it might be for heredity's sake. Children might want to know why, how their mother passed away, and so they could, you know, watch for symptoms, signs, stuff like that. But basically the words were, no, I do not want her to have an autopsy.
What other things do you recall discussing with Chad that morning?
I always come prepared when I'm especially going a long distance like that. Well, I'll bring the booklets that I need. I'll bring a casket book so they can pick out caskets. I try to do all that in the home so they don't have to make a secondary trip into the mortuary to make those arrangements. So most of the arrangements were done by the time we left the place, as far as choosing a casket, choosing a vault, choosing a place where they're going to be buried. Putting together a program was still left open because all things happened very quickly.
When you say very quickly, what do you mean by that?
Quickly meaning that he wanted to have the funeral service as soon as possible. And this was on a Sunday morning. And I said, well, with social media, we need to have word get around so that the people will know, so that you'll have somebody showing up at the funeral. And even announcing in the newspaper, there's deadlines to meet. And so he said he wanted to get this done just as quickly as he could. His words, not mine.
What was his proposed funeral schedule?
He wanted to do it as quickly as he could. I think there was some discussion of even possibly doing it Monday, but that was very quick. We talked about it, and he said, we'll do the viewing on Monday. And we came to a reasonable conclusion that the funeral on Tuesday would probably suffice.
In your experience as a funeral director, would you say that scheduling was in the norm?
No. Usually there's a 3-4 day time period between the death and the funeral, sometimes up to a week. So there have been funerals that we've not held for weeks.
And why do you typically at least have 3 or 4 days? What's the reason for that?
The preparation to get things ready for the funeral, like I said, to ascertain information for the death certificates, to get programs together and gathered, letting people know, setting up the church, putting the relief society in motion so that they can have the luncheon prepared. It can be done in a few couple of days, but for the most part, just to give them the opportunity.
Did you notice anything about Chad's demeanor and tone when you were interacting with him planning the funeral arrangements?
When I was there, of course, when I gave him the hug, he was teary, and he just lost his wife. But it just seemed like there was a businesslike atmosphere about it, which could be either a person's way of dealing with grief, or it could be, I want to get this thing done and over with. In fact, I believe the direct words to me were, I don't want to drag this out. I don't want to drag this whole process out. I says, okay, we'll work hard and try to get it done by Tuesday.
Did he happen to articulate any reasons why he didn't want to drag it out?
No, I just wanted to, I think it was just for, because that sometimes is a long time to wait to bury somebody, maybe 3 days, 5 days, 1 week, 10 days, whatever, before the service. He didn't want to have the hoopla of that going on.
So when you finished talking to Chad, making these arrangements, what did you do next?
At that point, when we were all finished with the arrangements, we moved over then to contact the mortician who actually picked Tammy up and did the embalming. It was Flam Funeral Home in Rexburg. I made a phone call to Mr. Flam, indicating that we were finished at Chad's house and that we would like to pick Tammy up and bring her back to Springville. And so he left his church meeting that he was in attendance to there, and we met him at the mortuary, his mortuary.
Is that a normal thing when there's a deceased that needs to go to another state? Do you normally contact a local mortuary?
Yes, we call that a trade embalming, where they will do the first call. When the person, they get the first notification of death, they will go ahead and embalm and then prepare whatever they need to. And then they contact, the family will then contact a mortuary to come in and whoever's going to be doing the service, which in this case was Chad. And he called me directly.
And Mr. I'm just going to ask the witness, could you slow down a bit?
Sure.
Our court reporter, you're talking pretty quickly. It's fine. You're articulate, but for the reporter's sake, if we could just slow down the pace.
Yeah. Thank you, sir. So when you arrived at Flam's, what did you do?
We met Mr. Flam, and he directed me to the dressing room, which we call it. It's just the room outside the embalming room. And he assisted me in moving Tammy from the table over to the cot that I had brought up so that we could transport her back home.
Did you make any observations of Tammy at that point?
Just a quick glance, because I'm concerned as well that this was a sudden death. I understand that she was sick, but somebody that young is usually physically enough to overcome it. But I wasn't there during her convalescence. So
when you say that you understand she was sick, how did you have that understanding?
I talked to Jason and indicated that he was told the same thing, but I actually heard that directly from Chad as well. She was not feeling well. She had a chronic cough. She was sick.
So your understanding of her sickness was from the information provided by Chad. Is that fair?
Yes. Yes.
And you said something a moment ago I'd like you to comment more to the jury on. You said you looked at the body because you were concerned. Can you explain the concern that you had?
Whenever there's somebody who's passed away without the doctors being there to handle that, I'm always really leery of things such as, well, I don't want to have an autopsy, I don't want to drag this thing out, and there were already some red flags that I had encountered. Prior to her passing away, that there was a cause of suspicion for me, and that, not suspicion, concern. I wanted to find out if she had fallen, if there was anything wrong with Tammy. Flam Funeral Home actually did an excellent job in the embalming process, and I just glanced at her just briefly, checking for any type of broken bones, marks on the face, on the neck, on the arms, on the torso, because she was there, and in the process of moving, we did see her entire body, but I saw absolutely nothing that I could determine. I'm not a medical examiner. I don't know.
So in fairness, you found nothing that you thought would be suspicious.
I found nothing there that would be suspicious that would lead to my suspicions, but. Because of the red flags, something wasn't sitting well with me.
Other than, I don't want to drag it out, I don't want an autopsy, was there anything else causing red flags for you?
The speed of the trial, the speed of the funeral.
Okay.
No.
And eventually you did transport Tammy's body back to Springville?
We did. Jason Gwilliam and myself transferred her all the way back to Springville.
And without stating anything that Jason said, did you have a discussion with Jason about Tammy on the drive back?
I did.
What kinds of things did you bring up and say to Jason in that conversation?
In that conversation, we were both talking about how quickly things were doing it, how quickly things were happening. We both felt there was a feeling of being rushed through this whole process. And I actually turned to Jason and I said, do you think he killed her?
Was that based upon the red flags that you were feeling?
That was based on the red flags.
And when you arrived at the funeral home in Springville, did you do anything further with Tammy's body?
Prepared her for the family who were going to come in later Sunday night to dress her or to finish dressing her. Typically, a funeral director will clothe them up to usually for sure to have the underwear on and get the body prepped ready so that they can come in and help dress. I did most of the dressing myself on this because they only wanted really to do the makeup to make sure she looked good.
Did you re-examine her body at the Spring Eagle Funeral Home?
I did, just out of curiosity for myself, just to satisfy my curiosity as to was there anything wrong. I saw absolutely nothing wrong.
So there are at least two times that you looked at her body.
That's correct.
Thank you, sir. Your Honor, I don't have any questions at this time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Rixon. We'll have cross-examination next.
Judge, if I could just have a moment, please.
You may.
Good morning, Mr. Schultz.
Morning.
I also have a tendency to talk quick and over talk people. Sorry. And it's an affliction I have. So between the two of us, this should be interesting. I'll try to slow down though. You've known Chad's family actually longer than you actually have known Chad. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, no, I've known of Chad, but when I really got to know Chad was when we moved into the ward. That's when I got to know him better. Okay. I knew his parents. From the same general area of town that we grew up in.
Okay. Okay. And do you recall that you spoke with Officer Mattingly about this case in an interview on February 19th of 2020?
Yes.
Okay. And Officer Mattingly went over a number of topics, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about each of
sure.
those if we could. Okay. You mentioned the name Jason William, and Jason William is related. Is it Jason William?
Yes, Jason Gwilliam is the husband of Samantha Gwilliam, who is the sister of Tammy Daybell.
Okay. And you mentioned something about Jason, and Jason knew Chad fairly well.
I would hope so, yes. He had been a part of their family forever.
Spoke very highly of Chad.
Correct.
Had a very high opinion of Chad, is that right?
That is correct.
And you as well. You had mentioned in the report... you thought Chad was a good guy.
Yes.
Okay. Do you still have that opinion?
Yes, I think Chad is a good person.
Okay. All right.
Never mind.
You mentioned with Officer Mattingly that Chad had spoke to you a little bit about what happened regarding Tammy. Is that right? About the manner in which she passed away. Is that correct?
Yes, I had that conversation with Chad.
Do you recall telling Officer Mattingly that Chad said Tammy had been sick and had a coughing spasm and he woke up, found her dead?
I'm repeating that from what Chad had told me.
Okay. And you mentioned that Jason William also was aware that Tammy had some medical issues as well. Is that right?
So Jason had indicated to me as well.
During your discussion with Jason, there was a history of some medical problems that Tammy was experiencing. Is that correct?
I don't know if I can confirm that.
Okay. But you talked to Jason about some medical problems, correct?
Yeah, that he had heard from Chad as well.
Okay. Okay. At the time you told Officer Mattingly that Chad found her dead beside the bed in the morning, that he called Garth to come and help out. Do you recall telling Officer Mattingly that?
Yes.
That Chad said he thought the coroner told him Tammy had an embolism?
Chad told Jason or me?
Told you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chad told me that the coroner said that she had apparently died from an embolism.
And sir, how long have you practiced the occupation that you practiced until your retirement in 2022?
About 12 years.
Okay. So you've had a significant amount of experience in viewing bodies and looking for things that you have a concern about regarding issues relating to people after they've passed. Would that be fair?
Yes.
And you understand, and please let me know, that if there ever is an instant where you were to find some problem with a body, whether it was something suspicious or something of a concern, are you under a legal obligation to report that to law enforcement as part of your licensing?
Typically not, because I would should have been overlooked already by either the medical examiner, the coroner, or the doctor who was the attending physician.
Okay, so you're not under any legal obligation to report if you see something suspicious?
No.
But under a moral obligation, you would report something if you found it suspicious, would you not?
You know what? I don't know if I really would report it or not, because it's already been determined by that attending person who knew that. So I don't know who I'd report it to.
Okay. So when you say that attending person, if someone passes away and there's a physician there, obviously there's no need to do an autopsy. Is that right?
Only if the medical examiner dictates it requires one. Okay. A lot of times the family will ask us if we want to have an autopsy done. In that case, they can bypass the medical examiner and have it done, a private autopsy done.
Okay.
Just to satisfy their curiosity.
But ultimately, do you understand that a coroner is the one who makes the final decision as to whether or not there's going to be an autopsy?
Yes, because that person will then contact the family.
And it's really the coroner's obligation to go through and look at a body and make an initial determination as to whether or not there's any foul play or anything of a concern. Would that be fair?
It's a good question, because if you'd have to trust your medical examiner or your coroner.
Right, right. And you don't know whether or not after they make this examination, if they're under any obligation to report any foul play, do you?
I don't know what they're...
Okay.
But
in any event, you took the time because you felt that the funeral was moving along quicker than you would like it to be.
Outside the standard norm, yes.
And when you talked about the standard norm, you mentioned that the standard norm is 3 to 4 days?
Typically.
Okay. So what we were looking at is doing this in 2 days, not 3 days, right?
Yes, but there was some talk about wanting maybe to do it on a Monday.
Right.
So that, again, just certain red flags.
But you don't know if whether or not this was a reaction to grief or whether just someone wanted to just, you know, not, as you expressed it, the hoopla. And what do you mean by the hoopla?
Getting things ready for the program, getting things ready for luncheons that need to transpire, doing things that the typical funeral would have to take some time to prepare and get people on board with you.
And in your experience, that could have two facets to it. That could either be a healing process for the family to go through that, right?
That could.
Or on the alternative, that could be an extremely emotional and difficult thing to go through that healing process. And we don't know which one we were dealing with here, right?
We do not.
Right. Okay. And according to what I'm reading in Officer Mattingly's report, you told him, Chad said he didn't want to drag this thing out.
Right.
He didn't say he wanted to hide anything, did he?
No, he did not. The only thing he told me was he did not want to drag this thing out.
Okay. Okay. And then you took the time to look at the face of Tammy. Is that right?
Correct.
You looked at the neck?
Yes.
You didn't see any issues of any kind of trauma or anything that would cause anything of a concern. Is that right?
From my limited medical knowledge, no.
Right. And I understand that. You don't have the expertise. Right. But if there was a concern, there was no visible concern of any kind of a problem. Is that right?
That's correct.
And then you looked at her arms as you dressed her. Is that right?
Yes.
And you didn't see anything on her arms that would cause you any kind of a concern. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay. And nothing on her legs that would cause you to have any concern, right?
Correct.
Okay. And nothing on any other part of her body that would make you draw any concerns for you. Would that be fair?
Correct.
Okay. You talked about Chad being a sexton. And a sexton is someone who works in the funeral business. Is that right?
Correct.
And Chad's occupation was part of it was to mow the grounds or take care of the lawn and the grounds area?
That's part of his responsibility, yes.
And in terms of dealing with the actual grave sites, there wasn't a situation where he would actually hand dig the graves, would he?
Very few hand dig. They have a backhoe.
Right. And you
right.
Anticipated what I say. Nobody uses a shovel anymore to do that.
Correct.
That's from the 1800s.
Whenever, yeah.
So in essence, what it is someone on your staff would take out a backhoe and use a backhoe to dig up a grave, right?
From the sexton's from the Sexton's boss? I mean, or
yeah, the Sexton's boss would do that, or who would do that? Use the backhoe.
Who would determine to use the backhoe?
Who would be authorized to use the backhoe when you're doing that as part of this process?
Well, it's typically the sexton.
Okay, so Chad might have had some experience with a backhoe, right?
He does.
Okay, maybe not experience with using a shovel to dig graves, though, right?
Correct.
Right. Now, at the time of the service, all of the kids spoke. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, all five kids.
Wait, one was on a mission, I believe.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. Four kids. You're right. When Chad was talking during the funeral, he broke down. He became very emotional.
He did.
Okay. Was that something that in all of the experience that you've had knowing Chad and his family, did that seem genuine?
Yes, it appeared genuine from my point of view.
And in your point of view is that you've known Chad for a good part of his life. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Well, not his entire life, for that 9 to 10 year period.
And you,
when we moved into the neighborhood.
And you worked with him.
We worked with him.
And you had an opportunity, like you said, during the time that you had downtime during other people's funerals, you'd have a chance to get acquainted with each other.
Correct.
So much that you made the opinion that you think Chad's a good guy.
That yes.
Okay.
From 2000 up until 2015,
right.
I had no problems.
Right. And then during the actual funeral, you had noticed that Chad and Emma were crying as well.
Yes.
Chad was doing something with his hair. He was emotional that he was tugging on his hair or something, you said?
Okay. Now, that is part of the... I just barely got to see the police report maybe about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, okay.
There was either a typo or I had missed... maybe I'd given the information talking about Chad... I may have mentioned Chad in the report. It was not Chad in the who was leaning over the casket, and it was his son Garth.
Okay,
who was there showing the extreme distress, emotional distress, and right. And Emma was there as well.
Okay, and were you aware that Garth and Tammy were extremely close?
Yes, Tammy was a good mother to all of her children.
She was particularly close with Garth, though. Do you recall?
I don't know if I could answer that she okay. was one way or the other. But
okay.
Can't put a hierarchy to it.
Okay. And I appreciate that.
Okay.
You mentioned somewhere in the report that you thought of Chad as a brother. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, I did.
And again, Jason William, at the time of the death of Tammy, didn't say anything particularly negative about Chad, right?
No. In fact, he defended him with my comment about, do you think he killed her?
Right.
Said, oh, no.
Jason shared the same opinion that Chad is someone who's a good person.
Yes, he would never do that.
Okay,
according to him.
And sir, thank you. And sure. I appreciate
it. Redirect.
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Schultz, to pick up where the defense just left off, excuse me, did Jason, in addition to thinking Chad is a good person, express any other thoughts about Chad at that time?
No, the thing that he mentioned was when I made that comment, his direct quote back to me is, oh, no, not Chad, never.
Have you since had conversations with Jason about this?
Yes.
Are you aware if he holds the same opinion?
He does not hold the same opinion.
And I want to go back to the question that you were asked about your opinion of Chad. You remember that question?
Yes.
And in that question, in your answer, you said effectively, Chad is a good person, but will you please explain to the jury now what was the but? What were you wanting to say at that point?
Well, the but was the red flags that that have come up since Tammy was deceased, and the time of the trial, the things that were being said, if you want particulars,
certainly if you'd like to share with the jury.
Okay. Well, there's obviously the doomsday type thing that after he left Utah, he got involved in a group. You want to cut me off? What? Oh, sorry. Okay. I thought you were raising your hand.
No, sorry.
I had most of this was from Jason, who had conversations with him as well about a date of the second coming, when that would happen, also of the of the catastrophes that would follow, Deer Creek Dam breaking, Utah County being flooded, white tents in a city being developed for the chosen, the elected, the people. And those types of things are what made me have the suspicion when I went up there and found things being appeared to be rushed, in my opinion. And that's why those are the red flags that I...
Thank you. You were asked a question about the norm of a funeral typically being more than 3 or 4 days.
3 or 4 days on the average.
And you still felt like this situation was rushed, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Was the fact that the death had occurred on a Saturday and there was a desire to have a funeral or at least a viewing Monday, does that play into the rushed feeling?
It does, because everything's closed on the weekend. You can't get a death certificate. You can't, you got to find, we have to have time to order caskets in. We have to have time for the funeral preparation. It can be done. And in this case, I think it was done by having the funeral on Tuesday, because that gave us one full working day where we could contact the authorities that we needed to get everything in order and ready for the service.
On a Sunday, are you able to contact a newspaper to put in an obituary?
We can put one in, but it's not guaranteed that it will be in the next publication.
Was that part of your concern for the rush?
Yes.
You were asked questions about Chad's ability to use a shovel versus a backhoe.
Yeah, I'm not sure where that... we don't use shovels anymore except for fine. When you're done burying, then you use a little bit of shovel just to kind of flatten out the blot.
Based on your background and experience with Chad, particularly that work background that you already talked about,
right?
Would it be safe to say, was Chad someone who was comfortable around death?
Oh, yeah, he would have to be. And yes, Chad wrote, he's an author. He's written books about death and dying as well. He's not squeamish about anything as far as being around a dead person, although that must have been traumatic for him to have his wife in that position. But yeah.
Thank you, sir. Your Honor, I don't have any more questions.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Wixom. Mr. Pryor, that was narrow redirect. Do you have any requests for recross? All right. That final topic, I think, went outside the scope of direct, so you may inquire on that final topic about the books.
We'll judge on the comfortable with death as well.
Yes, that's it.
Okay. Being involved in the funeral business, such as you are also comfortable with death and viewing bodies. Is that right?
Correct.
And that goes with part of the occupation. Would that be fair?
Yes.
Okay. And just because someone writes books doesn't necessarily mean, if Chad hadn't had his experience as a sexton, just the fact that someone writes books about topics that make some people uncomfortable doesn't mean that you're necessarily comfortable with death. Would you agree with that?
I'm not really sure. Can you rephrase that?
Sure. Just because someone writes books about topics that make people uncomfortable, does that mean that you're necessarily comfortable with death if you've had no other experience?
I think that would probably have to vary from person to person.
That's fair enough. Thank you. I appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right. That'll conclude the testimony of Mr. Schultz. Is the state intending to recall him at any point?
Your Honor, the state is not intending to recall him.
Is he under subpoena from the defense?
No, Judge, we don't intend to recall.
All right. You're released from any subpoena. Thank you for appearing and testifying this morning. You can be excused.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right. The state can call its next witness.
State calls Ron Arnold, Your Honor.
I only swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
All right. Now that the witness has been sworn, I do have a few questions before we commence with direct. Mr. Arnold, have you observed any of this trial, either through online or in the courtroom, since it began?
No.
Have you discussed anybody else's testimony with them that they've given in the trial?
No.
Okay. Thank you for your responses there. Ms. Beatty, if you'd like to inquire on direct, you may.
Thank you, Your Honor. Sir, could you please state your full name and then spell your last name?
Ron Arnold, A-R-N-O-L-D.
Where do you live, sir?
In Salem, Idaho.
And what county is that in?
Fremont County.
Okay. Who are you married to?
Whitney Arnold.
How long have you lived over there in Salem?
5 years.
Okay. Do you know an individual? Well,
actually, I've lived there. Sorry. I've lived there since 2015.
Fair enough. Do you know an individual named Chad Daybell?
Yes.
Do you see him in the courtroom today?
Yes.
Can you tell me where he's sitting and what he's wearing?
He's sitting right there. He's wearing a white shirt and tie.
And were you familiar with Tammy Daybell?
Yes.
Where did you meet Chad and Tammy Daybell?
I was in Chad and Tammy's ward.
Okay. And about
Chad was my home teacher for 3.5 years, and him and his son came in to visit us on a regular basis for that time.
Which son was that?
Mark.
Okay. And did you get to know Tammy as well?
Yes.
Okay. About how often did you interact with her?
Not that much, to be frank with you.
Okay. I'd like to ask you about some dates in 2019 and 2020. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the weekend of September 21st, 2019?
Yes.
Now, I'm going to back up a little bit. What's your occupation?
I'm a real estate broker in Southeast Idaho for Ron Arnold Realty.
Okay. And that weekend of September 21st of 2019, were you asked to do a real estate showing?
Yes.
Who asked you to do a real estate showing?
Chad.
Where was that real estate showing?
It was on 1800 East and about 190 North.
And that's near Salem or in Salem?
Yes. Yep.
And did you end up doing that showing for Mr. Daybell?
Yes.
Who, if anyone, came with Mr. Daybell to that showing?
I picked him up at his home and we met people there.
Who was there?
David Warwick and Melanie Gibb.
Was anybody else there?
Yes.
Who was that?
I didn't know at the time. I was introduced to this person. They said his name, but I didn't remember. But looking back, it was Alex.
Alex, too. I apologize.
Alex Cox.
Thank you, sir. Was anybody else there?
No.
After that showing, did anybody in that party purchase the property or did anything come of it?
No.
Okay. And I'd like to talk to you about October 19th of 2019. Do you remember that day?
Yes.
What happened on October 9th of 2019?
We received a call about between 8:30 and 9 o'clock. Whitney and I received a call, and our bishop had informed us that Tammy had died.
What did you actually, approximately what time on the 19th did you get that call?
Sometime between 8:30 and 9 o'clock a.m.
What did you do after getting that call?
We immediately went to the house.
Whose house did you go to?
To Chad and Tammy's house.
When you got to the house, who was there?
Chad was there, obviously, and some of the kids. Everybody was in some different rooms, so I didn't take inventory, I guess.
Fair enough. Did you see Chad?
Yes.
Did you speak to Chad?
Yes.
Did you notice anything about his demeanor?
He seemed distraught.
Did you speak to him?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I asked him, you know, how he was doing, and, you know, in that situation, you know, a spouse passing away and.
Did you discuss with him how Tammy had passed on that day?
Not really. No.
Okay. Did you attend a memorial service for Tammy Daybell?
Yes.
Do you recall when that was?
I think it was a Wednesday. I think the funeral that was in Springville and on a Saturday, and this memorial was on a Wednesday.
Okay. So when you say there were two separate services.
Yes.
And when you say one of the services was in Springville, would that be Springville, Utah, where Tammy was from?
Yes.
And you attended a service in Idaho for Tammy?
Correct.
And that was a few days after her death?
Yes.
Okay. At that memorial service, did you speak to Chad?
Yes.
What conversation did you have with Chad the day of Tammy's funeral in Idaho or service in Idaho?
More specifically, I mean, we visited, but he said that he wasn't going to be living at the house at the time. He didn't feel comfortable being there and was going to stay in Rexburg with a friend.
And when he said he didn't feel comfortable at the house, did you take that to mean the home that he had shared with Tammy?
Yes.
Did he say anything about leaving Idaho?
Yes.
What did he tell you about that?
He said that he was going to go to Hawaii to do a biography, help a friend do a biography.
Did he identify who this friend was?
No.
Did you think that was strange?
I took it for face value. I mean, that's what Chad had been doing some, you know, writing books and those types of things.
Okay. At some point in time, did you learn that Chad had remarried?
Yes.
At some point in time, did you meet Chad's new wife?
Yes.
When was that?
It was in probably early November. Do you want me to explain the circumstances?
Well, let me just ask you a clarifying question.
Yes.
Was that in November of 2019?
Yes.
Approximately how soon after Tammy had died did you meet Chad's new wife?
That's when I met her.
In November?
Yes.
Okay. And do you remember when in November?
Not specifically. We were having his kids over for a family evening and a meal. And he had called me that day and said he wanted to bring his new wife over for us to meet. And I had explained that, I says, well, you know that your kids are coming over to our home for supper. Why don't you just come then and eat with us? And, you know, you can introduce us then.
And did you meet Chad's new wife that night?
Yes.
Who was that?
Lori.
Lori Vallow?
Yes.
Did you have a conversation with Chad and Lori about whether or not Lori had children?
We asked her the normal questions you'd ask somebody that you don't know, you know, where are you from? How many kids do you have? You know, those kinds of things.
And do you recall what Lori's answers were or what Chad may have said?
I recall her saying that she had seven kids.
Okay. And could that have been in reference to her and Chad's kids combined?
I was thinking that it was her children, not Chad's.
Okay. Did she say whether she had children living at home?
No.
Okay.
She was not specific about her children.
Okay. Were you with her the entire night or were you in other parts of the conversation that evening?
They weren't there that long, but you know, we had a dining room area and a family room area that are kind of connected. And so everybody was kind of together.
Socializing.
Socializing is.
Okay. After the dinner that you had with Chad and Lori in November of 2019, when was the next time that you heard from Chad?
In March of 2020.
In what part of March of 2020 did you next hear from Chad?
It was around the 16th of March.
And how did Chad contact you or how did you come into contact with Chad?
He called me and asked if he could meet with me.
And did he tell you why when he was speaking with you on the phone?
No.
And did you meet with him that weekend in March?
Yes.
Where did you meet with him?
He came, we were just moving from our rental into our new home and I had him meet me at our rental.
And Judge, could I have some foundation as to what year they're talking about?
Would this be, thank you, Mr. Pryor. Would this be March of 2020?
Correct.
Thank you. So you met with Mr. Daybell at your rental home.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you do next?
He got in with me in my vehicle and we drove around and visited.
What was the first thing that you talked about with Chad Daybell?
I asked Chad the questions that probably everybody else would want to ask about where are the kids and why haven't you told anybody? And sorry.
That's okay. So let's zoom out a little bit.
Okay.
What was going on at that time that caused you to ask Chad those questions?
Lori had been incarcerated. And there was the big news and search for missing children.
Now, did you learn why Chad had wanted to meet with you that day?
Yes, eventually, yes.
And why had Chad wanted to meet with you that day?
We had previously talked about splitting his property and possibly putting another home on it, and we determined that his lot was too small, and so he wanted to know if he could put a home on it, which we thought I thought he could. My experience thought he could probably put another home on it, and we talked about the fastest way that could be done, and that was with either a manufactured or a modular home, and we talked about some of those details.
And did he tell you why he wanted to put that home on his property at that time?
He said that he felt like he was going to need a place for him and Lori to live.
Okay. And you said that you talked to Mr. Daybell about doing that as fast as possible. Why did you talk about doing it as fast as possible?
Probably because getting into a home and having one built back then took 8 to 10 months. And you could get a manufactured home in 3 to 4 back then.
Okay. And back to the conversation that you had with Chad about where the kids were. When you asked where the kids were, whose children were you referring to?
The kids that were missing, Lori's kids.
His wife, Lori's children. And what did Chad tell you about his wife, Lori's children, and where they were?
He looked me straight in the eye, and he told me that they were okay. And when this all was going to be, when everything came out, that everything was going to be just fine.
And that was in March of 2020?
That's correct.
I have no further questions for this witness.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Beatty. Mr. Cryer-Cross, yes.
Good morning, Mr. Arnold.
Good morning.
So my understanding is you mentioned that you live in the Salem, Idaho area, right?
Correct.
Been there since 2015?
Correct.
You're actively involved in your church, is that
yes.
right? That's the LDS faith, is it?
Yes.
Okay.
And please, Mr. Arnold, wait until the question's done before you answer. Our court reporter can only take down one at a time.
No, Judge, I just realized I was going very quickly, so I'm going to also slow down.
I like him to go quickly.
Seems to be a habit with a lot of people. You mentioned that Chad was a member of your ward. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay, now, from someone on the outside, describe, in essence, what a ward is.
A ward is a geographic area in a stake that's the geographic area inside the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Okay, so are there more than one stakes in a state?
Yes.
Okay, so a ward is a geographical area within the a part of, in this case, it's Eastern Idaho. Is that right?
Correct.
And that would include the town of Salem, which is, I've been there a couple of times. It's a small community, right?
Salem's not an incorporated town. It's a right. small community. A ward has somewhere between 300 and 600 people in it. A stake okay. has somewhere between 25 and 3,000 people in it. And it's based on numbers in a geographic area.
So if we talk about the Henry's Fork ward, we're talking about a very large geographical area.
The Henry's Fork. There is the Henry's Fork ward, but it's the Rexburg Henry's Fork stake, and it had 9 wards in it, and the ward we were in was the Salem 3rd ward.
Okay, and having gone through Salem, what I recall about Salem is there's a church there.
Correct.
And that's kind of pretty much all of Salem. Would that be fair?
Well, there's a lot of residents there, all spread out, but yes.
Other than commercial buildings and religious facilities, Salem consists of a religious facility, right?
Yeah, there is a church house in Salem.
And it's a fundamental part of the community there. It's a drawing area where the people meet on Sundays and other times for various activities. Would that be fair?
That's correct.
And in one instance, the use of Salem Church is for some of the folks out in the Salem area, the only place that they could get internet access. Would that be fair?
No.
It's not?
No.
Okay. But the church offers free internet as part of its building there. You recall that?
The internet in our Salem building is really bad, so you don't go there to get internet.
Okay. Okay. So you mentioned in September 21 of 2019. Do you recall that?
September
21 of 2019.
Yes.
And that was on a Sunday.
Well, if the 21st is a Sunday, yes.
Okay. Well, on that particular day, you were at church with Chad that morning. And
that is correct. Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
Don't hold me in contempt. I'm trying.
No, I'm
thanks a lot for that. Would you ask him for me too?
Okay, yes.
Thank you. You're just going to make me slow down even more now.
Okay, so on September 21 of 2019, you started the day with Chad at church services. Is that right?
That's correct.
And without getting too personal, I know how long I'm in church, but how long of a process is that?
Well, it's a 2-hour block, but there's meetings for leaders before, and then there's some things to do after church.
Right. So it can encompass 3, maybe even 4 hours sometimes.
Correct.
So on that particular day, although you may not have a specific recollection, Chad could have been there just before 12 o'clock that day. Would that be fair?
I can't remember, to be frank with you, what time we was meeting, because we switch every year. Our meeting times switch every year.
But it does run late into the morning, right?
Yes.
So that wouldn't have given Chad an opportunity on a Sunday to leave and meet with anybody else prior to your you picking Chad up at his house on the 21st, right?
I was not with Chad eye-to-eye contact the whole time at church, before or during or even after.
Okay. But when you picked up Chad at your house, at his house, he was still in his church clothes, wasn't he?
He was in a white shirt and dress pants, but no tie.
Okay. But that would be that wouldn't be unusual for what he would wear to go to church, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And then at that point, you picked him up and you drove out to a piece of property that you were trying to market. Would that be fair?
Yes, which was basically less than 2 minutes from Chad's home.
Right. And I appreciate you telling me that. And at this point, Chad mentioned to you and a guy by the name of Keith about looking at that property. What was that connection with the property and a Keith?
Keith had been somebody that I had been talking to about trying to help him find either a home or a piece of property that he could purchase and build a home on.
Okay, and that particular piece of property is something that Keith was interested in prior to you going out there with these other folks. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay. But then at some point, Chad contacted you and said he has someone who has expressed some interest in buying or at least purchasing some property in the area. Do you recall that?
Yes.
And that person was a guy by the name of David Warwick?
That's correct.
And David Warwick contacted Chad, and in turn, Chad provided you with David's phone number.
That might have been how that went. I think, originally we met at the property first, and then I think Chad provided the phone number for David.
Okay. But you're not sure about that.
Yeah. I can't remember the order of that.
It could have been the other way.
Yeah.
Okay.
The first time I met David Warwick was at that property.
Right. Okay. So we're unclear as whether you had the phone number before or after.
Correct.
Okay. And then when you drove out to that property with Chad after church, did you visit any other properties?
No. I had tried to get Chad to wait till Monday, and he had indicated that they were only going to, the people that were coming to look at it were only going to be there Sunday, and it would only, you know, we really needed to do that. So he pressed that. And so I reluctantly agreed to go show that property that, and it was actually in the afternoon.
Okay.
It was after 12 PM.
It was later in the afternoon.
It was a little later in the afternoon.
So maybe church and all of the obligations where church may have run a little later.
I had been at home when he called and says, will you come and show this property?
Okay. And at that point, when you showed up, there were several people there. Is that right?
The only person there was when I arrived was, and I learned this later, was Alex.
Right.
And then while we were there briefly, and David and Melanie showed up.
Okay. So from what I understand then, it's your testimony that this person, Alex, showed up first when you arrived with Chad.
I don't recall if he was there when we arrived, or he arrived after we were there, but we weren't there very long.
Okay. And this person drove in a his own vehicle when he arrived there. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I assume that, yes.
It wouldn't be someplace where you'd walk from somewhere
no.
in Salem to go there,
no.
right? Okay. And then subsequent to that, in an absolutely separate car, the other two people who you mentioned were, who were the other two people that were there afterwards when Alex arrived?
Oh, David Warwick and Melanie Gibb.
Okay. So then in a separate car, David Warwick and Melanie Gibb arrived, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And how long were you there looking at the property?
Maybe 15 minutes.
Okay. And did David express that he had an interest in purchasing a piece of property?
He had indicated that he was either looking here or in another location to maybe do some okay. developing.
And did he have the, did he give you the indication that he had the financial ability to do that? Or is that something you looked into?
We did not talk about that at that point, at that time.
So at this point on September 21 of 2019 in the afternoon, if I understand you correctly, you didn't look into the financial resources that David may have to purchase 88 acres. Is that right?
It was 79 acres.
Oh.
And I had not checked with him prior to that.
Oh, I was under the impression it was 88 acres. Am I mistaken?
79.
79 acres? Okay. And the cost of that 79 acres would have been about how much money?
At the time, about $700,000.
Okay. And but you didn't take the liberty of deciding whether or not David could afford that 700 and some odd thousand dollars. Is that right?
Mr. Pryor, I didn't know who was coming.
Okay. That's okay. I'm just asking.
I went there to show the property as a favor to Chad.
Right.
And so that's the first time I'd met David Warwick. Chad had mentioned that he had talked to several people that were maybe possibly looking at developing property in the area.
Okay.
And I assumed that this was one of them.
Okay.
And so if we would have kept pursuing it, obviously I would have.
Okay. And that's not Ms. Amin's. I'm just getting the fact that we didn't establish whether David could even afford to buy that property is where I was going.
I guess I'm not seeing the relevance of that question to me.
Okay. Well, that's unfortunately up for the judge to decide, not for you and I to decide. You understand that, right?
I guess. No, okay. I don't.
Thank you.
Maybe not.
Okay. And then at some point, there was an arrangement for you to meet the following day with David. Is that right?
I don't think so. I think we maybe tried, but they were leaving town. And so the only contact I had with David after that was we had a couple phone calls, follow-up phone calls. You know, are you interested? He wasn't sure. And then we didn't have any more contact after.
So you don't recall the fact that you went to Gringo's restaurant the next day with Chad with the intention to meet David Warwick on that following Monday. You don't recall that?
Actually, I don't.
Okay. And you don't recall mentioning to Chad that David had notified you that he had already left town and wasn't going to be able to meet on the Monday following?
That's good. That could have happened that way.
So in other words, there could have been a discussion with David about going back to the property, and it could have happened that he called you and said, I'm having to get out of town, and I can't meet with you on Monday. It could have happened that way?
We did not have a conversation about him returning and looking at the property before okay. he left town.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you, on the 19th of 2019, you... we're over at Chad's house. Is that right?
What's the date?
October 19, 2019.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And when you were over there on October 19th of 2019, you're familiar with that house, right?
No, I have never been inside that house.
Oh. Okay.
I had been in the foyer, and they have a breezeway or an entryway, and that's as far as I'd ever been in okay. that house.
Did you familiarize yourself with the property surrounding that house?
When we talked about splitting the property, it was about the acreage,
okay.
not about the house or the floor plan or any of those kinds of things.
Okay, so the acreage that you're talking about, do you have any recollection of how much acreage we're talking around that surrounds Chad's house?
You own it. How many acres is it?
Well, I appreciate it. I don't know. Judge, could we have a sidebar?
Yes. All right. Thank you, counsel. We're back on the record. I had a sidebar with counsel regarding the last response from the witness, and I just want to instruct at this point, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the witness just provided what was essentially an unsolicited factual response in the case, and that answer has no relevance to the charges in this case or the guilt or innocence of the defendant. I'm going to instruct you to disregard that previous comment made by the witness, and on that fact, do not discuss that in any way in your deliberations or speculate about the previous answer. And I'll also instruct the witness to avoid mentioning that topic again. Mr. Pryor, with that in mind, then you can continue with your cross-examination.
Thank you, Judge. Now, you mentioned that Chad said that the kids are fine, right?
Yes.
And you mentioned that the truth will come out. Is that what you said? Something to that effect?
I didn't say the truth. He said that when things all come out, everybody will realize that everything will be fine.
Okay. So from that, did you glean that the children were alive?
I assumed yes.
Okay. And did Mr. Daybell at the time, did Chad at the time, when he told you that, was he sincere about what when he told you that?
Yes.
And you've known him for a while, then that was true sincerity when he told you the kids are fine, right?
Objection calls for speculation.
Hold on, don't answer that. Sustained.
Okay. Now, you talked about the fact that there was some discussion, and please, there we are. You talked about the discussion that it would generally be against your practice to do anything on a Sunday, correct?
I don't try to work on Sunday.
But then, for lack of a better word, from my perspective, that would be called like a Sabbath. Are you familiar with that term?
Yes.
But regardless of your faith and your beliefs, it's a day that you reserve for spending time with your family and doing things in that regard, church and family.
Yes.
Okay. And Chad was of the same faith as you are and had the same practice of Sunday was reserved for being at home with his family and practicing your faith and your commitment to your family. Would that be fair?
Everybody does that different.
Okay. And typically most folks in your faith would have some sort of a meal on a Friday or on a Sunday in the morning or in the evening. Is that true or is that not true?
That's subjective too.
Okay.
Everybody does that different.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. Then you went to a discussion that in March of 2020, that there was some discussion about subdividing the property. Is that right?
Objection misstates the testimony.
Stain.
You had some discussion about putting another modular home on the property. Is that right?
We had determined by then that we couldn't, that the county wouldn't let him split the property.
Okay.
But because there was another, there had been a single wide trailer on the property as well as the home and another septic system. And I had told him that the county would probably allow him to put another home on it, knowing that he would never be able to split that or sell that separately.
Okay, I see. So I misunderstood the facts a little bit. Thank you for clarifying. So in other words, there was some thought process initially into doing some sort of division of the property, and you folks determined that was not feasible. Is that fair?
That's correct.
So the only other option would be to use a then existing septic that was already on the property somewhere, correct?
No.
Okay, please tell me then.
Because it had a septic system, the county would probably allow him to put another home on it, not necessarily that they would have to use that septic system.
Okay. All right. So there was an intent of March of 2020, from what I gather, for Mr. Daybell and his new wife to put a residence up for them to live in.
That's what he indicated.
Okay. So the intent was for them to stay for a while. And then
objection calls for speculation.
Stain.
The intent was to put a mobile home up on the property for him and his wife. Is that right?
He had mentioned that could have been one of the reasons.
Okay. Judge, I don't think I have anything else. Thank you.
All right. Redirect.
Your Honor, I'm sorry to do this, but I'd ask for a brief sidebar. I think.
Okay. Why don't we do this? It's a good point for our mid-morning recess. Let's go ahead and take the recess. If the jurors are able to, because of our shortened day, maybe we can get the recess done in under 30 minutes, maybe 20 to 25 minutes for the recess if possible, and then we'll continue. I'll have the sidebar with counsel.
All right, please.
Okay. Mr. Arnold, we'll have you retire to the vestibule there while we take up this evidentiary issue and take the matter up in your absence. Ben Miss-Beatty.
And Your Honor, getting into this witness's intent, I think that having this witness testify about Mr. Daybell's intent and his sincerity and his rationale for putting this manufactured home on the property, I think the door has been opened to the fact that it is now Mr. Arnold's opinion as a realtor and as somebody familiar with what it takes putting a manufactured home on a property that Mr. Daybell's urgency in wanting to put that manufactured home on the property while Lori Vallow was incarcerated was due to the fact that doing an excavation would allow him to dispose of evidence. I warned Mr. Pryor about that this morning prior to the testimony of Mr. Arnold. I had no intent to get into that on direct, but it's my belief that the door has been opened.
Response, Mr. Pryor.
Judge, I don't believe the door has been opened in that. The difficulties I'm allowed to inquire was the intent, because the initial testimony, if anybody opened the door, the state, when they said, well, they talked about Chad and Lori wanting to live in the house, and there was testimony about that. I'm allowed to inquire as to whether or not Chad and Lori were going to be allowed to live in the house, and that was their intent to live in the house. There's no intent to open any door, and there wasn't any opening of any door. And if you're going to allow a realtor to speculate, and obviously a hostile realtor to speculate about something like that, I think that's highly prejudicial, and the door has not been opened at this point.
I think the door has been opened at this point based on the cross, so I'll allow that, but I'll be careful, Ms. Beatty. It's got to remain within his personal knowledge, not speculation, of course. And I also am somewhat concerned about your witness going back with that factual assertion that's going to confuse the jurors. So be cautious if you're going into that territory, but I do think the motivation or intent was brought at issue in cross, so I think it is fair game for redirect, but I want to be ready to try to shut things down if it starts to run off the rails on that previous issue as well. So that'll be the court's ruling. I'll permit limited questioning on that, so long as it goes to direct personal knowledge that this witness may have about the issue.
And Your Honor, if I may ask just a clarifying question to make sure I stay within the parameters of the court's ruling.
Yes.
My intent would simply be to ask the realtor, based on his knowledge of, you know, the process of putting a manufactured home on a piece of property, and based on what he has learned about the children being found on the property, does he now have a different opinion about why Mr. Daybell wished to have a manufactured home put on his property?
Well, so long as it's based on his personal opinion on facts that he knows and not just pure speculation, I'll see how the questioning goes, but I will permit a line of questioning on that.
Thank you very much, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
Okay, we'll take our break, and then we'll try to come back on here 20 minutes at about 10:35.
All rise.
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast.